listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 230 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. My sleep has adjusted. I'm back on American East Coast time after our trip to Valencia. I'm rested.
Yes, that jet lag is a beast. It's amazing how long it takes to recover.
For me, getting there was totally fine. I don't know exactly what my process is, but always being there, I adjust really well, and then coming back is awful.
And it's weird because you just feel in a fog for longer than you expect. You think you just snap right back into the routine. But anyway, we had an excellent time in Valencia at the DIY Musician Conference there at the Berkeley campus.
Yeah, now that we've complained about our sleep, we had an amazing trip in Spain.
Yes. Everyone's really sad for us right now. Aw, they can't sleep after going to Valencia.
No, that was awesome. I love that conference. It's it feels so familial. I don't know if that's the right, well, unless you fight with your family, that's not a good term. Communal. It's very communal and kind of an intimate version of our big conference that we do in the U.S.
Yeah, you really feel like you're spending the whole weekend with a smaller group of people because you see everybody all together all weekend. So it feels more community event as opposed to a big conference where you may see people and meet new friends, but you're not all in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, and you moved people to tears with your make music for you speech, whatever it's called. Forget about marketing.
Yeah, that's my goal.
That's not really the point of your speech. It's to be interesting with your marketing because you're being authentic and not.
It's the idea was for the artist to feel okay about being themselves as the artist first and everything else flowing out of that.
Yeah, it was a great way to kick it off because I think people need to be reminded of that more than we wish we would.
Any other big takeaways from Spain before we move on?
Takeaways from Spain. Well, you know, there was a lot of talk about dry streams, which I think is a really interesting buzzword going around now about the type of disengaged listening that can happen on like mood-based Spotify playlists where you know, your song might fit someone's need for hearing something cool, but they don't give a damn about you. They're not going to check you out as an artist or listening to anything else you put out. You're just the song of the month or whatever.
Would you say you're experiencing that right now?
I am absolutely experiencing dry streams, for which I am grateful for all of these dry streams. But
why don't you describe what they are for people that are listening? Because I think it is an interesting idea that is happening in a streaming world.
Yeah. So, okay. In my own case, I did a collaboration with a band called Date Night, and they're in a different genre from me, and it has led to, for me, a huge uptick in streams and monthly listeners. And I don't think any of it is really coming back to helping me in sort of that long-term way of building a fan base. Like, I've sold CDs and had people added to my mailing list over the last couple months as this song's been out there. But none of those things are related to this new song that's on some big playlists. They're all people that I know are coming in either through, you know, my existing list or some live streams that I'm doing or like word of mouth from, it's all stuff I can track through activities besides my playlist placements for this song. So even though like kind of overnight I had 70,000 new monthly listeners, no, none of those people give a damn about me. So,
well, I think the interesting thing is like, if you go to Chris Robley's profile on Spotify, the top song right now, it's pushing 200,000 streams, right? The one, the collaboration that you did, correct?
I think so. Yeah, I haven't checked in a while, but.
And my next question for you was, when this song started doing really well, are you seeing any overflow into your other songs
Nope.
And the answer is no.
No. I mean, I can't say that there's none, but it's if so, it's extremely negligible because all my other songs are about where they are and or you know, sort of on that same trajectory they were already on. So no, it's not overflowing.
And thus the idea of the dry stream, the idea that you're getting streams for your music, but it's not converting people to more of your catalog.
Exactly. So there's two benefits, I guess. I mean, there's one, there's the vanity metric of like, oh, look, I have monthly listeners, and that maybe creates a perception of importance or coolness or whatever. And then all of those are monetized streams. So I'm making, you know, money from the streaming of the sound recording and from the mechanical royalty from the publishing aspect of it. So there's money being made, but yeah, nothing in terms of like sustained fan base growth.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we started this conversation based off of saying we were at a conference, I think that's something that people are going to be talking about a lot this coming year if you are attending various industry events or conferences. The idea that, yeah, we created this streaming ecosystem that does drive more usage of music. Nothing wrong with that. But how do we then turn that back into true fans? Because right now there's a lot of examples of artists that have an enormous amount of streams, but honestly don't have that many fans because
right.
They've made something that's been useful for a playlist, but the people listening to that playlist aren't engaging with the playlist in order to find new artists or to follow that artist. And so it's just an interesting new problem to solve. And I think it can be solved. It's just, you know, things are different.
Yeah, well, there's one interesting, I think, thing for me from this point on. For one, we're going to do another collaboration with that same band. And I assume, you know, that song will get served to the same population of listeners. But because it's in a different genre, I'm also curious what will happen when I put out my next sort of solo song that's more along the lines of what I normally do. And I think now I have this greater pool of people who could be algorithmically served my next solo single, which is good, I guess, unless they're like all EDM fans who are then scratching their head about why this song with an acoustic guitar or whatever is suddenly in their Discover Weekly playlist or whatever. So, I'm curious to see what happens the next time I put out new music.
Yeah, I think that's going to be part of the trick. To kind of close this loop and my biggest takeaway from the weekend at being in Valencia was just the idea that how important it is to just set time aside to focus on your music career and learning and just kind of getting your head in that space of, hey, I'm going to just spend some time in it. You know, I know a lot of us who I know, like you, Chris, and I, we spend a lot of time thinking about this in our normal life. And I know many of you listening to the podcast do. But just the idea that you set aside time and you're like, that's all I'm going to do this weekend is just focus on music related things and be amongst other people that are doing the same. I think it's hugely helpful. Even if you're in different places in your career, it just helps you. I don't know. It just gives you a new focus and an excitement and energy for doing some of the stuff that honestly isn't all that fun.
Right. Well, it's like you're saying, setting aside the time is important, but then also, yeah, just being together with people who understand your ambitions and all that, it's like so validating. Because I think you bring up a lot that sort of what we really want is validation. And we want to prove to our uncle that what we're doing means something when the uncle was like, you're never going to make money, get a real job, you suck, whatever. It's like,
yeah,
I never had that uncle. My uncle actually gave me a guitar, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of doubt.
There's voices in our head and voices around us, real people that say stuff they just don't understand. So yeah, it's hugely helpful. Even though I was speaking a lot over the weekend, it's still helpful for me to just kind of get in that headspace and just sit in the content and think about it and strategize and make some next steps and all that. So I think that's something that every artist should set aside time for. And by the way, coming up in August, August 16th through 18th, the DIY Musician Conference comes to Austin. We make the ticket extremely affordable compared to other events in order for you to set aside time for that weekend. It's only $129 right now, and that's the whole weekend. Enormous amount of content, lots of great showcases and open mics and things like that happening this year.
It'll be nice. Three nights of music on two stages. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And it's going to be nice and warm in Texas. I can't promise it won't rain, but I can promise you won't be cold.
If it rains, so, we'll probably be thankful.
Yes, it'll be that warm rain, which it did in Nashville last year at the conference. I was laying at the pool Sunday afternoon thinking, finally, I can breathe. And it was warm for about 20 minutes, and then this giant downpour moved in. And you know what? I just laid at the pool and let it rain on me because it was warm water coming down on me. So I was already in my bathing suit, so what's the problem? But yes, DIYMusicianCon.com. We hope to see you in August. I think it's a weekend that's well worth your time. It'll really energize you and get you focused and learning lots of great stuff in order to, you know, give yourself an advantage to getting your music out there, because, you know, that's helpful too.
Yeah. And well, just one thing to throw on top of that, it's not just a community event. It's not just an education event. It's like a chance, you know, to do some networking and meet reps from huge music brands. And, you know, we've got awesome sponsors. So,
yeah.
So join us.
Yes, we will be there. All right. Today we are going to do a jam-packed episode of listener feedback and questions. Since we've been traveling and going to Valencia and just planning for that, we got a little behind on answering some of these questions, and it's been a bit since we've done a podcast like normal. We've done a couple live episodes in the past couple months, and so we're kind of getting back into the normal groove, and we've got some listener questions that have piled up, and so we're going to tackle those today.
Let's do it.
All right. Where should we start?
Well, we have more emails than we have calls, right?
Yes.
All so right. Maybe we start we with an email. Stop.
Yeah, let's start with some emails. Some of them are a little bit lengthy, but hang in there. I think they have value, and a lot of them have been asking questions that we've been getting asked a lot lately. So here it goes. Hi, Kevin and Chris. Thank you for all the great episodes of the podcast. I discovered it a few weeks ago and have been listening to many episodes on my way to work. I hope you're having a great time at the DIY Musician Conference in Spain right now. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it this weekend, but I will definitely come next year. My question is, how would you approach the first single release of a new project or band when it is first coming out and has no music out yet? I am a musician from Germany and have been writing and producing songs since last year, and I finally got the master of my first single. I don't have an album or an EP coming up, but maybe three other songs that I could finish over the next couple of months. However, I feel like I need to release something now to put myself out there in order to start booking shows or even making a Facebook or Instagram profile public. I've noticed that you talk about single release strategies and making tools like Show.co and Spotify Follow or Spotify Pre-Save Campaign, but these only apply when you have music out, don't they? How about pitching the song to playlists or blogs? Do you think that's even possible when you have nothing out yet and no website, Facebook page following? Do you have any advice for release strategies for this kind of situation? Or do you think I should just put it out there since there's no room to market anything when there's no Facebook page, platform, or no other music for me? Thanks, and have a great time in Spain. Best, Marcus. And let's see, he has a PS. We can get to the PS in a second because it's a different question. So we've talked a lot about this. We've been getting this question a lot lately.
Yeah, first I would say you're on the right track if you've never put out music. To be preparing to put out a single first, as opposed to trying to do, you know, an EP or an album, because that at least is a small way to kind of plant your flag and be able to claim your profiles on the different streaming services and stuff like that. So at least good job for doing a single first. you can't really do a Spotify follow campaign because you don't have an artist profile on Spotify yet, but you could do a Spotify pre-save campaign. Because at least you can start doing that once you've signed it up with CD Baby and we've delivered it to Spotify. Even though it's not out yet, you have that window of time to do a pre-save through show.co.
Yes. Yeah. I would just address the sentiment that the overarching sentiment that he seems to have in his email that he can't market his music because it's he's a new band. I would say that's not true, but there are some things, like you're saying, the Spotify for artist profile you won't have yet. But once it's delivered, you said they can get it after it's been delivered. I know they can do a pre-save, but can they? When can you actually claim that Spotify artist profile? Do you know?
Actually, I don't. That's a good question. Like, can you claim it once music's delivered but not activated yet?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I was under the assumption that you have to wait until you have something that's live, but
that's what
maybe
my
assumption
was too. But and they've been changing a lot of these tools and not really making, you know, notice of it. As far as like they don't say, hey, we've changed how this works. Like if you log into Spotify for Artists now, it looks drastically different than it did just a month ago, and that looked different than it did 3 months ago. They've been really messing with how it works, so that could be something that changes. But I would definitely say, yes, you can market your song. Playlisters aren't going to care. They're not necessarily looking at your profile and seeing, oh, there's this big established profile. I'm not going to add this song to my playlist. You know, some might. But what I would say is that the success that I've had reaching out to just, you know, user-generated playlists has been finding them on Facebook from my personal Facebook page, messaging them, not from my band, but just me as a person, messaging them and saying, hey, here's a little bit about me. Here's our song. Would you consider adding it to your playlist? Usually the direction I take is, hey, I've been digging your playlist and following it. I thought my band's new track would fit perfectly. Here's the link. Would love for you to consider adding it to your playlist. And I think that's something you could absolutely do being an artist that's got a new song. Just saying, hey, I'm a new artist out of Germany. I've been enjoying your playlist and think my song fits right in and thought you might like to check it out. Here's the link. So you can do that all day long.
Yeah. And on the note of, he'd mentioned blogs. I actually think that the fact that this is your very first song gives you kind of an edge, because bloggers, if anything, they always want to be like the first to share some new cool thing that no one else knows about. And so I wouldn't overlook that. I mean, there's something like there's a tool like SubmitHub you could use to, it's sort of an intermediary that helps you pitch to blogs. You could check that out. Or if you have the contacts yourself, you know, you could do your own little PR thing. But yeah, I think the fact that you are brand new gives you an edge with blogs, actually.
Yeah. And also once you have that single live, you know, getting people to follow your Spotify profile, you said it's a new artist name. So Spotify profile is a good goal. And there's tools, you know, with show.co that you can use to do that, and incentives you can create, you know, to get people interested, because then you're going to start building up for the next single. And I would highly recommend that you follow up with a song within a month or two. You said you had a couple extra songs, so that I would highly recommend following up quickly. Then it builds a little momentum. The platforms like to see some momentum.
And I think it sounded like he was holding off on creating a website and a Facebook page and sort of a social online presence. I would get that going, you know, as soon as you can, because certainly by the time you have this song out, you want that stuff there, but I would try to launch it even ahead of that.
And well, here's his PS is about the artist name. So I'm going to read that and we can comment, because I know a lot of people are also in this position. He said, I also have trouble deciding on a name because I want it to be kind of in between a solo project and a band project, but I don't want a usual name in it. My full name is Marcus Christman, and I don't like the ring of it for this kind of music. I am thinking of Love MC with a comma in between, or just Love MC without the comma. The music is kind of mellow, alternative pop with a bit of dreamy 70s vibe.
I feel like Love MC is is misleading then, because as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, it's some kind of hip, you know, like positive hip hop, or like maybe like an urban R&B kind of thing. Was it like, I don't know, something made me think hip hop.
Yeah,
I mean, the MC thing, I guess.
Yeah, but, well, I would be surprised if Love MC is available. I haven't searched it, but you're probably right. It's probably a hip hop artist that goes under that moniker. So that might be something to consider.
I mean, I know he's just abbreviating his first and last name, but
how about I don't know. That's a tough man. Names are tough.
Yeah. Unless you use the auto band generator, band name generator online.
Yeah. What does it do? Just like take three random words? Is that what
I think?
Does?
So it's been a long time since I used it, but yeah, it would just generate ridiculous things.
Yeah. Well, sorry, you don't have more help on the name front. 70s dreamy pop. You know what I would do if it was like 70s? I would go through and just look at an enormous amount of band names from the 70s or artist names, because they really had even the names from that era seemed to just feel 70s for whatever reason. I don't know. Yeah. The way people were naming things, and I don't know. It's a tough one. Sorry, we couldn't be more
helpful. There's definitely like, I don't know what you'd call them, naming conventions per decade or something, you know, per music period. It's interesting. Yeah. Like, I feel like I could hear a band name now and be like, oh, that's from 2010 or that's from, yeah. But I think Love MC is misleading, so I would steer you away from that personally.
We are good at crushing band name hopes here on the podcast.
We have no constructive criticism. But we'll have destructive, yes.
Destructive criticism. all right, we're going to move on to the next email. Let's do another email, then we'll jump into some phone calls. Why don't you hit the next email, Chris?
Okay. I had read one. This is from Dave King. Hi guys, I'm a longtime CD Baby artist and I'm getting ready to release a new album. I'm not sure the best way to accomplish what I have in mind and hope you have some suggestions. Since we are in a singles driven and streaming world now, I'm wondering if it is possible to release the 12 songs on my album individually, perhaps on a bi-weekly or monthly basis, and then include all of them in a complete album as a whole after they have all been released individually. I guess the question is it possible to release the tracks from a full-length album to CD Baby, Spotify, iTunes, etc., individually at different times instead of all at once? This way I can spread out the time and duration of promotional and marketing efforts over a longer period and then end with the big album release at the end. I also hope to release music videos along the way as each individual song is released as part of my marketing plan. I'm hoping you can explain how I would be able to do this and if it's possible. Thank you so much. And again, that's from Dave King.
Another question that we've been getting asked a lot. I think in all the Q&As we've done at our recent live podcasts, some of them that have happened after we've finished taping, I think we've been asked this question, maybe even multiple times.
And I definitely get why it is asked so often, because there's something freeing about realizing you don't have to complete an entire album before you put this music out, either whether that's just because you don't have the budget or you don't have the time to like complete 12 songs, or you're impatient. Like, there's a lot of reasons why just doing a song at a time seems freeing and a good way to go. But I feel like you're about to steer him a different way.
Well, what do you have to say? I've got opinions.
Well, I would say, yes, you can absolutely do that. Plenty of people do. My take on it would be, don't release every song from the album individually first, because when the album comes out, you want to hold something in reserve that's new, both for, like, you know, your audience to be excited about diving back in. And then also because it's tough to spin a new exciting story out of just like herding a bunch of cats that have already been wandering around in the front yard. So, you know, everyone's already seen the cats and they've seen the cats pee on things. And now it's like, hey, I'm just going to get all these same cats together and you can see them pee all at once. I'm really going in a weird metaphor there.
This is really weird. I'm picturing all these cats drifting in the front yard, and somehow those are my songs.
Yeah. So I would say definitely release some singles. I don't know if it's 12 songs, maybe do 2 to 4 or 5 or 6 even, like, but just don't do the whole thing. That's my take on it.
Here's where I start. And I think most people are starting from the point of, is it a singles world or is it an album world? And to me, that's a totally different thing. Set that aside altogether, because it doesn't matter. To me, what matters is when people are approaching a release and they're mentioning this, they're really thinking marketing hook. Is it going to be more of a marketing opportunity to have all these singles rolling out for a year as opposed to have one big album? That's usually how it gets presented to me. And I think that's how the question usually gets posed, not as a, I'm just going to release singles versus albums because nobody listens to albums anymore kind of argument. So if we're looking at it from a marketing hook perspective, I think that marketing hook gets old and tired. Think about month 9 or 10 and trying to keep your fans interested in that you've got another song for that month. And it's not a new song. It's not related to what's going on in the world at that time. Like, you know, a lot of the people way back in the day of the podcast when I had Jonathan Colton on and he was doing the song a week, all those songs were related to what was happening in the world at that moment, typically. And so that added some of the interest to the fans and people following along, like, how's he going to interpret the world this week? When you're doing a song, you know, a month for an album that's basically finished, it doesn't have that connection. And it just starts to sound old and tired after a while, in my opinion. And also, chances are you're going to release your best songs first. So then the songs are going to get progressively less interesting.
I never even thought of that angle. Wow, that's really cynical. Yeah,
I'm just delivering some truth here.
No, that's true. Yeah, you're probably right about it.
You're not going to put out your hot single last after a year of releasing songs. And so that last one.
I'm really excited for you to hear my most boring song.
Thanks for this year-long journey. Hanging in as they got worse and worse. Here's the worst song I recorded in the last year. So to me, it's going to have that vibe. It's like, it's going to be hard to maintain excitement. So I like the idea of, if you've got those songs, even if you don't want to do a whole album, I like the idea of some singles. I like the idea of maybe grouping them into 3 EPs. Maybe there's some themes that emerged and now you can group songs together that maybe have similar themes or feel, or here's the summer EP. I've seen people do like summer, fall, and winter and kind of break it up that way. Or, you know, just maybe even theming it around more like the playlist mentality. I think there's some things you can do to make it interesting to stretch that out. But just doing a song a week for a year to me is not interesting. As a fan, I would get bored. As a fan, I would be like, just release all the music already, especially if I'm really digging the first couple songs. In fact, for a band that shall remain nameless, Out of the Blue said that they were going to be doing a new album this past fall. And they immediately released a new track. And this was like in September, or it might have even been August, but it was like early fall. New track, it's out. And it's like, oh, this was unexpected. And then they followed it up like, I think it was like a month later with another track. I'm like, oh, cool. Then it was like, oh, now the album will be out in January, end of January. I'm like, huh, just release it all already. We're here. You got our attention. I'm hooked. Let me enjoy it and really get hooked. So to me, there's some of that element as well. It's like, if you drag things out too long, I think you have a window of time where people are into you. Like this past fall, different band, I was so into Death Cab for Cutie. If you were in my car, chances are you heard Death Cab for Cutie. And that season has passed. So if they had drug out some of their promotion for that new album and just kept releasing tracks, I'd probably eventually lose interest. And it kind of lose its impact anyway.
Well, and I just thought of one other thing. I forget if he said whether all of this stuff is completed, you know, but if you're in that situation where like you've finished everything and now you're going to trickle it out over 12 months, like the person you should be most concerned about boring is yourself. Like 12 months from now, are you going to be excited about something you recorded a year ago, and like, because chances are you'll now have new ideas and new projects underway and, you know, new things you're working on, and you might lose your own steam for promoting these things to the degree that they deserve.
Yeah. And that's also part of it. Yeah. It's going to get real tedious to you as the artist, and chances are you're not going to make it. I don't want to sound like the really negative, but the idea that you're going to have that steam to keep being excited about it month by month as the songs maybe are starting to feel less interesting to you and less fresh, chances are you're just going to roll them up and put them all out again. And it just is the album. So that's why I'd say do it in a way that's more sustainable, that I think has a build up, a big pop and payoff, and then, you know, following up with alternate content, like we talk about sometimes, where like alternate mixes, live versions, things that allow fans to experience those songs in different ways, but don't make them wait forever.
Agreed.
Two emails, two hopes and dreams crushed. I'm
next up.
At this point, I should remind people that if you've got questions or comments or feedback for the show, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And with that, let's get into our first call. Here we go.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Love the podcast. Long-time listener, second-time caller. I go by the name Glowing Ice. I released a album this past year in 2008 over the summertime called Sunshine Fun Time. And it's a one-man kind of thing. Mostly I do production and sing the best I can. But most people really like my songs just because of the instrumentals. And so I recently released in February the instrumentals to the album Sunshine Fun Time, and I am now currently in the process of wanting to press up CDs, and I want to include the instrumental CD along with the original with my vocals on it. And when I release it, I just want to release the instrumentals as a bonus CD. And I want to know, with that, should I include the UPC I used for the instrumentals also, or just the original UPC from the album with my vocals on it? Because I'm not going to try to, I don't know, it's weird. Anyways, that's my question, and thanks, guys. Keep up with the podcast, and I'll keep listening. Thanks, bye.
All right, thanks for the call. So the quick answer is, anytime you have new release, it has to have new UPC. You cannot use the same UPC from the album version with vocals for, you know, a instrumental version of the album. They have to have different UPCs. So think of it as two different. I think with UPCs, the easiest way to think about it is from the physical world, because that's still how they're used. So if you went into a music store back in the day, and an artist had their normal album version, and then there was a separate CD with a version with no vocals on it, an instrumental version, those would be two different products sitting on a shelf that you would have to take up to the cash register and scan, and they would have two different indicators, two different UPC codes to indicate that they are different products. So that's how you have to look at it still in a digital world. So new product, new UPC code.
And that even applies between the exact same album in different formats.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. So if you've got vinyl versus a CD release, the vinyl should have a different UPC code. A lot of times, as independent artists, it doesn't impact us on the physical side anymore, because we're not putting product in stores. We're just a lot of times selling it from our merch table. So if I didn't know about it and put the same UPC code on my vinyl release, chances are I'm not going to see any impact from that. But technically, that's how it works. All right. Well, thanks for that call. That was a quick one. Why don't we do one more call? And
okay. Hopefully, it's another dream we can crush.
This might be. I don't know. Let me see.
Hey, Kevin and Chris, it's Mike Serber, aka Dear Mr. Henshaw, singer songwriter. I had a question. It's been a while since I've heard you do some of the listener questions, so I had a feeling you might be getting close to that, so I thought I'd throw one at you. What's one thing for each of you or both of you, what's one of the things that you preach that you still are not very good at executing, that you know yourself that you wish you did more of, or you know you should do more of, if anything? Maybe you guys are just making a list and crushing it. But I personally keep amassing all these tactics from people like you mostly, and examples of things that I should be doing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, blah, blah, blah. And it's the execution that I have a hard time with, sometimes. So I'm wondering if there's anything that you, experience like that, as musicians. And, thank you very much for all you do. I really appreciate you. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Mike. He wants us to get real, Chris.
Oh, so many things. Can I just say everything?
Isn't this whole podcast about everything we do wrong?
Right. Who wants to go first?
You can go first.
All right. Well, so I guess on the marketing-ish, like running your business side of things, I have not made nearly enough use of my email list, both in terms of actually just staying active with it, and, you know, sending out regular emails, and then doing things like, you know, Kevin interviewed Cheryl B. Englehart like a year ago or so, and she had all these great ideas for automated email sequences. I have set up a welcome sequence, but that's basically where I did a few different sequences, but not nearly as much as I should. So that's a thing that I feel like I've neglected. I've also have like big dreams about Facebook retargeting stuff, and you know, like if someone has visited a product page of mine on my store, you know, making these sort of customized ads that hit them up again to just see if I can get them back into the checkout process, all that kind of stuff. I have big goals and very little follow through on that aspect. And then just personally, artistically, I would love to get, I don't know, a little bit more, input from people like, I don't know, Tom Jackson or anyone who can provide like insight into how I'm performing, because I feel like I fall into that usual thing of thinking I've done a huge rock leap when actually I just jumped an inch off the ground. And, you know, having someone else provide feedback and kind of breaking me open as a performer, I would love to do that, but I have not done that yet.
You want someone to break you open?
Yeah.
There's a couple things I would say. For me, is definitely email is one place where I drop the ball. I mean, I've sent like maybe two emails since 2019 started to our band list, and I keep getting that monthly MailChimp bill going, dang it, I sent nothing. but I'm getting ready to remedy that. The other issue that I've been dropping the ball on is, you know, we've talked about options where you can do merch and try things out without having to have stuff printed up. And so it's a matter of just getting things designed. And I don't know what it is about getting merch designed that I just have this big mental block of like, oh, do I really have to go through this process of like asking for a design, being disappointed what I get in return, and then figuring out how I'm going to move forward without having stupid looking t-shirts or, you know, so I just have this mental block as far as merch. But Then the other thing is like, the band account's kind of drained right now. I should probably wait and pay a designer later. But I'm getting over that one right now. I'm actually getting ready to solicit design for three t-shirts that I'm going to use one of those services and start trying to, you know, test out some t-shirt ideas and just some merch and get some activity going. But email and that whole aspect, like the merch aspect, is where I've been dropping the ball a lot lately. I think in general, you know, because Mike on his phone call was talking about he has a list and can never get to it. I feel the same way. And I really suffer from focus issues sometimes, not even just with marketing and promotion, but just how I approach trying to work on new songs and finish up songs. Like the band is currently waiting for me to record a bunch of guitar tracks for a song right now. And so it's just sometimes I just feel like I need to be able to give myself permission to just focus on one thing. And then even when I do, I still have issues with like my brain just has a hard time focusing on one thing. So that to me, it's like, I'll try and go through a season like you mentioned, Facebook ads, Chris. I went through a season where I was really focused on just trying to educate myself on that. I've gone through seasons of really focusing on pitching my songs for playlists and such. So it's, you can't do everything at once.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no way to do it all. And you're always going to have that backlog of things that you need to check off the list, like always. And like you're saying, there'll be different modes. Maybe it's, oh crap, I got to write a new song. Or maybe you've written too many songs and you've neglected Facebook, but there's always going to be something to do. I feel like acknowledging that is a good way of just, you know, taking a little bit of the pressure off of having all the answers and all the time, because we don't. But you know what else I did find helpful is, you know, like at CD Baby, we have this kind of agile scrum process. We use a thing called Trello to kind of manage our projects, and they move through like from left to right. It's like the to-do, these would be nice to have if we have the time to get to it, column of things. And then there's a like, okay, this is what we're all working on. And then, okay, these things are probably finished, but we need to be sure. And then there's the like done, scratch it off the list thing. And I've started doing that with my own music making, and it's been really helpful for me to just have that list and that catalog, but also see clearly how I can spend my time to move things from left to right, basically.
Yeah, I've found that when I create a list, and not like a very broad list of like get more playlist placements, but like try and break it down to be more actionable, of like something that I can imagine myself sitting down and doing 30 minutes at the end of the day, or really just trying to think through something. Sometimes a task feels very big or undefined, and then when you put some just really what it means is to, I just need to send 3 emails every night to promoters or whatever. A lot of times it starts to be like, okay, I just need to get in a routine of doing that. And now that I've kind of broken down the task, it can just be put on autopilot. So I don't know. Sometimes it's just a matter of starting.
Yeah. So, well, and actually starting and kind of failing or screwing up, because
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Well, that's how you figure stuff out.
All right. We've got another call, but we'll save that. Let's move on back to emails. Let me see which one. I've got one more to read, and you've got one more to read. So let me see. Okay, I'm gonna tackle this one. This one is short. Hi guys, I'm a new member at CD Baby. My band Space Muse, I think that's how you pronounce it, just released our first single 3 weeks ago, and are about to release our second. I've been listening to the podcast, love it, by the way, and just heard episode number 168 about no budget video. I thought I'd share what we did. We're an unusual band in that we don't play live or even live near each other, spread out between Northern and Southern California. We all work beyond full-time and have no budget or time to work on a real video. So we used a combination of iPhone footage shot while tracking in the studio, along with found public domain footage, to create a surreal and absurd video to promote the single. It's crude as hell, but we've gotten great response from it. I thought you might find it interesting to see what you can make completely with free with virtually no equipment. Even the editing program was free. Enjoy, and thanks for the podcast. I'm learning a lot from it. And that was Jeremy. And it's Space Muse, but it's spelled M-U-S with like 2 dots over the U. So that's got to be Space Muse.
I think so.
I clicked on the link, and I thought the video was fantastic. I wouldn't say it was crude. I wish he had told us where he got the public domain footage from. I know you can do searches and find some repositories of public domain footage. That and which video editing software he used, because it wasn't, at least the impression I got, it wasn't iMovie. Like, it had like some nice title. Like, it looked far better than I expected. And the footage from the studio, it all worked really well. I thought it was a great video.
I don't think you sent the YouTube link to me.
I don't think I did,
comment,
actually.
But I'll have to Google it.
Yeah.
Sounds intriguing.
Yeah, it was great. I actually, the interesting thing was, is I know there's some services out there that will like take random footage and add it to your footage to make a music video. And so I was kind of expecting it to feel more random and just kind of like, what is going on? But I thought it had a nice flow to it, more so than some of those random generator things. So nice work. And cool. Next time, just give me all the details. That's what I like. I like to know what you used, the software.
Well, maybe Jeremy will write or call back.
Yeah, websites where you found the free stuff. Yeah, thanks for sending that along, Jeremy. All right, why don't you do your last
email? The email, okay. Hi, Kevin and Chris. First, a giant thank you. When I was starting out in the 90s, in more ways than one, there was nothing like the CD Baby podcast. Even now, in the information age, you guys have been one of my most valuable resources for navigating the landscape as an indie Americana folk singer songwriter. My question is about crowdfunding. In case you haven't been following my Twitter storm, I'm about to launch my first campaign on Kickstarter to raise funds, awareness, and support for the making of my fourth album. It's my first in over 10 years. The last two have been with CD Baby since when they were released. And after a long hiatus, I'm coming back to recording and performing. Two questions. One, SoundScan. How do I track the digital and physical CD albums that were pre-ordered through a crowdfunding campaign? How do you track them as units sold? Number two, related to that, my campaign launches soon, but the album won't be out until 2020. Is there a post-launch platform where late backers can pre-order the album? I feel like there must be a tool like Show.co for these kinds of things. Should I just set up a pre-sale site as part of my website store? Or since I'm going to be distributing through CD Baby, is there a way to do this through them? I'm planning on making a companion book via Book Baby with lyrics, art, and essays. I would like to be able to pre-sell both the CD, the book, and the CD book bundle. Your thoughts? Oh, and I'd be tickled if I could inscribe your names on my She Shed wall. The reward starts at $1 and the campaign launches April 23rd. There will be a link at my website, www.arielsilver.com. Thanks, Ariel. So Ariel spelled A-R-I-E-L-L-E, silver.com. So first, I feel like I'm going to wander through this. I hope you have some clarification, Kevin, but SoundScan isn't possible with Kickstarter, I'm pretty sure. Pledge Music used to let you report your pre-order sales through Pledge Music to SoundScan, but Pledge Music is going through a lot of trouble right now and I would not use them.
Well, you can't. So at this point, you can't use Pledge Music. They don't let
right. They haven't been, if anyone doesn't know, they haven't been paying
for a long time. And now you can't even, you can't take pledges anymore. So there's a lot of campaigns that are just frozen in space.
Yeah. So that's sad for a few reasons, but, yeah. Do you know for sure? I don't think Kickstarter lets you report.
I don't think they do. And I didn't report them. I have done a campaign through Pledge Music and I don't know what the requirements were for reporting to SoundScan. The hard thing is with SoundScan is that they have to, you know, be verified purchases. And it's really hard when just selling something that that you're fulfilling much later, because it really has to do with the fulfillment, like the day it's available. So for example, when you pre-buy an album on iTunes or even the CD version on CD Baby, because we've done this for some artists, it's not a feature that's available to everyone on the CD side, but when you pre-buy an album, the day the album comes out, the release day, is when all those SoundScan things will report. So it's not like it's reporting all along. And so you really have to have a mechanism to do that with verified purchases and know that the album really is coming out, which with a fan-funded thing, it's really hard because the release date oftentimes comes and goes. And sometimes the artists still haven't fulfilled the physical product and whatnot. However, I would not worry about SoundScan. That's the least of your concerns, I would say, at this point, because there's so many. Even the major label artists are just gaming the system now with pre-orders. That if this is your first album, it's not really going to mean much of anything. Unless you're selling, you know, thousands and thousands of copies, then, you know, that might make some difference. But in general, it's
it's a fourth album, but I think it's just been a while since she's put something out. So I don't know what the size of her audience is, but
I still wouldn't even be concerned about it, because if your audience is big enough for it to make a difference, it's going to show up everywhere else as well.
Yeah. Although I did think, does Bandcamp, I think they have a mechanism for reporting sales, right?
Yeah, Bandcamp does report to SoundScan, and they do have mechanisms to do pre-orders. So that might be the preferred method to go about doing this. That's what I would probably recommend. When you were reading that, that came to mind as far as when she was asking, like, once the fan funding's over and people still want to pre-order and they miss the campaign, what's the best way to do it? I would do it at Bandcamp. That's where I'd go.
I think we addressed all those questions. Good luck with your crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah, we haven't talked much about that in a while. And I haven't really talked to many artists that have been doing them anymore.
I did actually talk to someone in Valencia who had run a Pledge Music campaign and got shafted like many other people, couldn't collect the money that they'd you know, were owed after a huge, you know, if anyone has done one of these things, you know, it is a huge effort. And like, I can't imagine how pissed I would be if I spent a month or 2 months just up late every night doing this thing. And then they're like, oh, by the way, you raised a bunch of money, but we're not going to pay it to you.
Yeah. If that had happened to me, it would have been devastating, because I felt like I had two full-time jobs when we did our Pledge Music campaign. We made it to the goal barely.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, the way, I think Kickstarter gives you all the money right then and there when it's done. I could be wrong. They may have changed it. I know way back in the day when we first started talking about the stuff they did, because that was one of the big differences between them and Pledge Music, where Pledge Music holds on to the money for a bit.
They hold on to it right until you've fulfilled everything.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes. Apparently they've been holding on to it indefinitely.
Yeah, they hold on to it a little longer now. This poor artist that I was talking to, she was just like, there was, you know, just a period of having to deal with the frustration. And then now trying to think of like, okay, well, all these people have already taken an action. How do I get them to basically do it again, but more directly? Like, I just felt so bad for him. Like, oh my God, like to have to duplicate all that effort. Anyways, we can move on to something less depressing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear from the audience if you've been running, still doing fan funding campaigns, if you've been having success, or if your thoughts have changed about them. There was a period of time where everybody was doing a Kickstarter campaign or a Pledge Music campaign or something, and I'm seeing that less and less and hearing about it less and less. So I'm curious if that's because it's so hard and people have had, you know, a lot of campaigns that don't get funded, and you're like, man, I just wasted a lot of time and effort. And then the people that did convert, but you didn't reach your goal, now you got to try and get them to convert somewhere else. So I'd be curious to hear feedback from anyone out there who has something to say about it. All right. Was that our last email?
I think that was the last email. Yep.
All right. Well, we've got one more call, and let's get to it right now.
Hey, Kevin and Chris. My name is John Joseph Holland, stage name Livender. I'm a solo musician / producer, and my question pertains to ID3 tags. So I mostly use Logic Pro to record my songs, and when bouncing tracks, there's the option to write ID3 tags. And from what I can gather, it seems like ID3 tags are something similar to metadata. So up to this point, I've been ignoring that option to write ID3 tags because I plan on distributing my music solely through CD Baby, and I've been assuming that you guys take care of all that stuff for me. So my question is, should I be filling in ID3 tags if I plan on distributing through CD Baby? Thanks for all your hard work on the podcast. I'll have music on all platforms soon, thanks to CD Baby, under the stage name Livender, and at livender.com. That's LIVENDURE. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Yes, ID3 tags are metadata. And the quick answer is, we take care of that for you. You don't need to add any metadata to the WAV files that you upload for distribution, because honestly, if you did, we'd strip it out anyway, because we would replace it with the metadata that you enter in when you sign up your music. And then we actually have to recreate your file in different formats, because all the music services request different file formats. Some use WAV, some want AIF, some want FLAC files, some want all sorts of different things. So we actually will then generate all those different audio formats for your music with the proper metadata. So you do not need to worry about adding metadata to the files you give to us. However, I will say an important distinction between what you give us and there's a distinction between what you give us and what you use as your personal, you know, promo tool. So if you have MP3s that you're sending around to press or to music supervisors or club bookers, you absolutely want to make sure that those MP3s that you send out yourself have ID3 tags, because that's how, when they load it up into their music player or iTunes or whatever, they see who the artist is, what the song name is. And so it's important that you put in that information. And you can also, like, there's a notes section. You can even add, like, your email address, like, for booking or inquiries, call, email, you know, band@mybandname.com. So that's a big difference. So what you give to us, you don't have to add anything, because we're going to add the information you give us. But what you're using for your personal promotion and stuff, it's important that you do add those, because that's where it comes into play.
As you were talking, it reminded me of that Billboard article that just came out that you were interviewed for about the world of music distribution.
Oh, yes.
And you had the quote about pushing files around. and as you were saying, yeah, we have to encode it into FLAC and this and that and this and that.
Yeah.
It's a lot to pushing files around, even though
there's
we do much more than that.
But that's the easy part. The hard part is the millions of lines of data of stream counts matching it to your artist account to making sure you get paid properly. And that's where most distribution companies don't think. They don't think about that part, because there's no one to pay when you first launch. And then when it starts rolling in and getting bigger and bigger, then payments get late and less precise. Yeah. After I got off the phone with Sherry Hugh, the writer, who also spoke in Valencia at our conference, I thought, wow, I could, if they print everything I said, there'll be people that are mad at me. But that's okay. I'm in Portland, Oregon. They'll never find me.
She seemed to pick judicious. I didn't think you came off as antagonistic.
I did call out one specific distribution company.
In the article you did?
Yeah. In fact, our publicist had, like, reminded me, like, oh, yeah, I did. I was actually, with the statement I was making was referring to all of them, but it said I was talking about United Masters, which I might have been.
Oh, that's true. I remember that. Yes.
This article is in Billboard. It's titled, I don't know. What is it titled? I don't have it in front of me. It's kind of a long title. It's about distribution and the idea of a lot of companies, especially when they have something that's not working, they go, oh, we'll pivot into distribution. And this thing that isn't working, we'll finally have some cash flow because we're in distribution. There's some sync companies that have done that recently, and other companies that maybe have a promo platform that they've pivoted into. And then they realize that distribution is hard and they didn't want to be in that business. And then they ask us to take their catalog from them. It's happened lots of times. So just come to the right place, CD Baby. You'll get it done right. We'll take care of your metadata. That's another thing that's, you know, as far as distribution, you can go to a place, enter song title and artist name and distribute it to maybe like Spotify. But if you actually want to make money, like fully monetize your music, if that's all you've done, you're missing out on a ton. Not only just because it's missing lots of important metadata, but we talk about Spotify and streaming a lot, but there's so many cool things happening where your music is monetized all over the place. Like, if you want to be on Instagram stories, CD Baby is the place to be. Right now, our catalog is available on Instagram stories, so all your fans can create stories and then add your music as the soundtrack really easily. It's so cool. And so there's things like that that you get when you come to the real place.
Make the smart decision the first time.
Chris and I are here to help. All right. Well, thank you for all those calls and emails. I feel like we're sort of caught up now from our string of live. We had a couple live podcast tapings, and then we've been traveling some, so we haven't been as consistent. And so I think we're caught up. But if you'd like to call our listener line, it's 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, what, any other burning topics we should have people weigh in on? We talked about fan funding. We talked about, we always get the band name one. That's a lot. That happens a lot. You know, I'm always curious if people are doing interesting things with, you know, how they're packaging up singles. Like, we've been getting that question so often that I'm curious to see what people are doing and trying, if it's been working or not.
Yeah. Well, this isn't really a question, but it was something I noticed today in the news that, both Amazon and Google have made free ad-supported streaming tiers for people who own their like home devices, like Echo and what's the Google Home?
And yeah.
So I was wondering if that's going to be the kind of the norm. I don't really see Apple doing the same thing, but who knows?
No, I doubt Apple will. In fact, you know, that actually is a perfect segue, Chris, because I did want to hit on that. We haven't been doing the news section anymore, but that was something that happened this week that was interesting. I don't see Apple doing that, but Apple, there was a news article a couple weeks ago or maybe last week that Apple has way more subscribers in the U.S., paying subscribers in the U.S. than Spotify.
Oh, right.
There's more negative headlines surfacing about Spotify as of late. And the interesting thing is with Apple, they're, you know, they pay out more. They've got more subscribers, at least here in the States. I know in some territories are not available yet, and they're still growing in some places. But also, another piece was that they've really doubled down on their algorithm for the For You thing, sort of like the Discover Weekly, their version of Discover Weekly. And so they're trying to make it push more music and be more tailored to individuals' taste. So things are happening on that front. You know, Amazon and Google, those devices are getting big traction. And Pandora has also been making some moves with podcasts and just adding more features in how people can, users can group songs together and add their own commentary track and make it like a podcast. So if like you wanted to start your own music podcast on Pandora, you can just go out to Pandora, collect the songs and put commentary in between and package it up as a podcast.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So lots of things happening on other platforms that aren't Spotify. So it's important to keep paying attention to where your fans are and understand what these platforms offer and how people access the music there. Because the Spotify, I think the main thing I credit Spotify with is really showing how in a streaming world, the consumption of music can be very different in a way that pushes more music, you know, into people's ears. And it finally demonstrated that you got to start thinking about things differently in a streaming world and stop thinking about it like it's a download world or a CD world. It, the way it's going to happen in a streaming world is different. So Spotify established that, and there's still some major players who actually make money. One of them being Apple. Well, two of the companies that pretty much own the planet, Google and Apple. Really making some moves, and it's going to be an interesting how things start to shake out. Actually, three companies, Amazon, Google, and Apple. Right there, it's pretty much the Illuminati.
Right. Well, now Facebook's going to feel left out.
Oh, don't worry. They're working on their own music service. So, yeah, it's. I think it's interesting. Lots of things happening where ultimately, you know, I think we're moving towards a world that's just super beneficial on all fronts, that people have different tastes. Not everyone's going to like Spotify. Not everyone's going to like Apple Music. Some people love their Alexa or their Google Home. And so they're going to be attracted to Amazon or, you know, YouTube Music or Google Play. And ultimately, I think it just means more and more people engaging with music and listening to music. You know, I think about the coffee industry here in Portland, and it's like 10 years ago, I would have thought, do we really need another coffee shop here in Portland? And it's probably...
Little did you know you needed 1,000 more of them.
Yes. And they all seem to stay in business. So that's just what we're going through in the music space.
Competition.
Yep. And, you know, especially when some people are making moves that are paying artists better. That's always nice, yeah, too.
Indeed.
All right. Well,
the weekend is almost upon us.
I've got to record some guitar tracks. I'm going to have a mutiny on my hands if I don't record tracks.
I took some time off yesterday to record. I got probably about 80% of a new song done, which I'm excited about.
And I should commend you on the fact that even while we were in Valencia, you still did your lunchtime live stream.
Yeah, a very short version of it. But yes, I did. And you were on it.
I was the roommate that stumbled in on it and like, oh, hi, sorry.
Yeah, if anyone's still listening to this episode, I've been doing a bi-weekly live stream. It's called Lunch Songs Live. So it's like on Tuesday and Thursday on my lunch break, I play some songs for 50 to 60 minutes. And it goes, I use something called Restream, and that makes it go to Facebook Live, YouTube, and Periscope, if in my cases, but you can choose from, you know, like 20 different live streaming services. So that's been fun. And yeah, I made it happen. And then to bookend this show with a talk about jet lag, the week we got back, I did not do one on Tuesday or Thursday because life was crazy and I was trying to just get back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
But yesterday and Tuesday this week, I'm back on.
All right. Well, they
so have lunch with me, people. Come, leave some requests.
Yeah, and if you're somebody that's been wanting to know, like, figure out how to pull this off, we should, you know what, Chris, I think we should do an episode where you detail all the ways you're doing this. If you haven't written a blog article about it, you definitely should. But
oh, I haven't. I should. Yeah, all right, let's do that.
Because I walked in and I was like, oh, this is, you know, more complicated than I thought. I mean, it's not super complicated, but there's some components. And with live streaming, the big mental block I've always had is like all the capturing the audio, getting to where it needs to be, and the video, and all that kind of stuff. And getting it ironed out.
In the version I did in Valencia, that was just truly sort of acoustic with just a mic in the room. But when I'm at home, I actually use some effects. So it's even more complicated at home, but you know, it's usually just set up that way. So yeah, let's do that. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Cause there's the whole technical side of it. And then there's the programmatic side of it, because you also have made like this cool thumbnail and all that kind of stuff and how you schedule it. So yeah, we should do that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Excellent. Let's do that. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. We will catch you next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.